Who's the best show here?
Head show! Head show! Head show!
Yeah! The Linux Night Tech Show is on.
Is on.
Your link to GNU Linux and the latest technology. 2 hours of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Free software, free speech, open technology,
and open mic.
I love it.
Now, live from the Linux Link Tech Show studios, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link.
Link, do you need something?
And take it away.
Episode 184 of the Linux Link Tech Show. We're here another week, another show. Things are moving right along.
Yes, they are.
184.
How you guys doing, all right?
Doing pretty good.
What's exciting and new?
I don't know. We got a great guest on tonight, back by popular demand.
Of course. Our old friend Dan Dennedy of Kino fame. Dan, are you there?
Is that my cue? Yes, I am.
Okay.
Is this...
Welcome to the show. It's been a while since we talked to you last time.
Yeah, thanks. It's good to talk to you guys again.
Is this your second or third time on the show?
Second.
Oh, that's okay. Oh, yeah, that's right.
By the way, I blurted out during the intro to a coworker. Did you guys hear that?
Or yeah.
Did that come through?
That's okay.
Yeah, Dan never mutes everybody else. He just keeps everything on full. So, you know, if you make noises, bodily functions, you'll hear it.
Okay, sorry about that.
Well, that's all right.
It's okay.
Yes, that special ambience to our show.
Yes, it brings the professional quality show up another notch.
Awesome.
So how's life in California, Dan?
It's kind of crazy. I've experienced my third earthquake so far in just 1.5 years. I'm sure there's been other, you know, earthquakes that if I was awake, you know, because I was sleeping, maybe I could have felt some more. But there's three that, you know, I definitely felt, and it was interesting. It's expensive. It sure has hit me there. I was in for a income tax shock as, you know, because we're living out here, we have to have a higher income for a higher cost of living. And my wife's gone back to work, and it pushed us over the limit for the child tax credit. We have three children, and all my withholding was based upon being able to get that, so it was all screwed up. Now I owe big time.
Well, that stinks. That really stinks. Mm-hmm.
Oh, and I trapped seven skunks
good, right?
in my yard last year.
You what?
2006. I trapped seven skunks. They have a major skunk problem out here, man.
So what do you do with a skunk when you're done trapping it?
I call the county animal control, and then they come out eventually, maybe anywhere from like 4 hours to a day. And then when they come, they have a syringe on the end of a 6-foot pole, and they inject it with something. And then they wait a couple minutes for it to go unconscious. And then they put it in this white plastic bag and take it away.
Would it be cheaper to shoot it with like a .22 pistol or something? They might get upset about that, though, out there.
Yeah, that'll cause more problems, I think.
Well, what do they just
maybe if they survive, then they'll go and they'll tell their other, you know, skunk buddies, hey, don't go there, you know. But I think I haven't had any problems for about 6 months, but I know my neighbors have been complaining, so I think they've learned to stay away from my yard now. But yeah, 7 in 1 year. Because we got basically stunk out of our house last January, and we had to spend a night in a hotel. It was so bad one time. They were in the crawl space of the house, and maybe it was mating or some territory fighting or something in
oh,
there.
God.
A big, big spraying right under the house.
So. Oh, that's awful.
Our boxer.
Welcome to California.
Yeah, our boxer went after a skunk once, and at 10 o'clock at night, when the dog comes into the house, and it was the most awful. Like we had to leave at 10 o'clock at night. We had to go to my parents. It was so bad.
Yeah,
and the dog.
We got a dog because of the skunk. Actually, I mean, we kind of wanted it anyways, but it was what the trigger was, and the thinking was, you know, maybe a big dog around would kind of intimidate them, or, you know, leaving big doll piles around would give them, you know, kind of like a territory marking. But he got sprayed 3 times. So that just makes it worse, because then you have to clean him too, you know. So
how did you get the smell out of your house then? Or you just learned to live with it after a while?
Well... open up all the windows and turn on all the fans and light a bunch of candles and steam clean the carpets, wash some things like some curtains that are washable, and then you just wait, you know. So for cleaning the dog, there's various recipes that people propose, including the tomato juice thing, but the thing we found the best was using female douches.
How'd you figure that out?
As opposed to the male douche.
Yeah. Hey, there might be, you never
know.
In any case, my wife found out she was at the store buying a bunch of supplies for our recipe that consisted of, like, some detergents and baking soda and vinegar and stuff. And someone saw all her ingredients and asked, you know, if it was a skunk spraying. And she said, yeah. And she's the person recommended these douches. So.
Now, I think you didn't pull that little handle thing out and start shooting the dog with it. You probably just took the top off and poured it over.
Well, you know, my wife actually did the cleaning.
Oh.
2 out of the 3 times that it happened, I was in England on business. So
lucky you.
Yeah. So, and we caught a couple raccoons and an opossum, and animal control set those free. Basically, they take it away in the cage, you know. So we assume that they were set free. So, you know, if you need to trap a skunk, then use peanut butter. That's the moral of the story.
So
peanut butter is the best.
Now, will peanut butter attract the possums and the raccoons too, or?
No. Uh-uh.
Just the skunks, huh?
Well, one time we did catch a squirrel, and, you know, the dog had a little fun kind of chasing it around.
Now, speaking of squirrels, I've heard that one of the tricks to getting squirrels to not populate your property is to put human hair out in your grass. And I've heard that people go into salons and stuff and collect their hair clippings and throw them out in their yard so that it'll chase squirrels away. I wonder if that'll work with skunks.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. The only thing I had to deal with around here is we've got bunnies. That's about it.
Yeah. I didn't have too much problems with things in Cincinnati.
Is that in the city of Cincinnati?
No, I was in the western suburbs.
Oh.
So it was very, very suburban. And where I am right now in California, East Bay of San Francisco, it's very suburban as well. And it's borderline some forest area, some at the top of some hill. So
now, was it your current job that took you out to California?
Yes, I'm a lead software engineer at Mobi TV, television, live television for mobile phones. And I was got one promotion since I started there, and now I'm working for the CTO.
Oh, congratulations.
It's pretty exciting. The company's doing really good.
I'm
just riding that wave.
For mobile phones, right? You guys were doing that?
Yes, and it's extending some. So there's this new product called AT&T Broadband TV, which is basically some live TV channels for a Windows-based computer. It's browser based. It works in IE or Firefox, and so we provide that product for AT&T. And I do work in some fourth generation networks, doing research and prototypes. And so we're using some other mobile devices, like kind of futuristic things, like ultra mobile PCs with special network adapters for 4G networks like WiMAX and stuff.
Let me ask you a question about that there. You say that is for mobile PCs. We're seeing a lot of products now starting to come out, particularly overseas, mobile devices, embedded devices that are running Linux. Is Mobi going to start looking at supporting a Linux client?
Well, we just got a Nokia N800. So we're supposed to start looking into doing some work on that. You know, we don't do a whole lot with writing the whole media player stack, so to speak. You know, kind of like the equivalent of GStreamer. We tend to rely more upon the platform's media playback capability. So for the N800, we want to use H.264 with AAC over RTP.
Okay.
And I'm not very involved on that, but I was told that it's not ready to do that, so I don't know. I know Fluendo has been doing a lot of work on RTSP and RTP support in GStreamer, so
yeah,
if it is available, it's probably very new. So.
Yeah, Fluendo just released a bunch of codec support, too. I'm trying to think, do they have a MPEG-4 in there?
I don't think so, not yet.
Yeah.
I thought they did. You know, Fluendo's great, but I absolutely hate their website design. I can't find anything I ever want to find. I want to go to... Okay, there we go, Fluendo web shop. MPEG 4 decoder, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, they do have.
Does it say anything about AVC or Part 10? Or H.264? It's funny because it's known by so many names. Three different names for the same thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, okay.
It's, it's because H.264 video codec is also known as... MPEG 4 Part 10, which is also known as AVC.
Okay. Now, this is MPEG 4 Part 2, which is referred to as DivX.
Yeah.
So is AVC... Kind of. AVC has nothing to do with Apple technology, does it?
No. Apple is just an early implementer.
Okay. Now, is the H.264... MPEG 4 Part 10 what Apple's QuickTime player uses when it uses H.264?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, is that...
It's good stuff, huh?
Yeah, is that a proprietary codec? I guess they're all proprietary.
Well, no, it's covered under... It's an open standard.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's covered under the MPEG 4 massive umbrella. Just to keep things confusing, you know? It's like there's two video codecs in MPEG-4 and a couple of audio codecs.
So Part 2 and Part 10 are the video codecs?
Yeah, yeah. Part 2 is the traditional. It's funny because we have, like, three names for the H.264, but We have one ambiguous name for the MPEG-4, right? So you have to now clarify it. It's MPEG-4 Part 2, you know. So, some people call it ASP for Advanced Simple Profile, but that's just one of the Part 2 profiles. So there's...
Now, doesn't Linux have support for MPEG-4 Part 10 through FFmpeg and libmpeg4?
Yes, it does.
So,
yes, it does. On the decoding side, it's native to FFmpeg. And on the encoding side, you use X264, which is a good implementation. So.
Now, are those kind of under the controversial licensing that you would see with Windows support for WMV or QuickTime? Or is it an open standard that anybody...
Yes, but it, you know, it's a little different than the Windows... based one. All the there's this institute, the MPEG LA. It's the licensing authority for MPEG 4 body of, you know, specifications. So it's a, I think they call it a patent royalty pool. So all the companies that were involved in the development of those specifications who are demanding some royalties get a portion of everything that goes into that pool from the licensees.
Uh-huh. So then with Mobi's products, are they, or Mobi is providing the stream, correct?
Yes.
Then if you have a media device that's capable of supporting that technology and is a mobile and can access the World Wide Web there, can it use Mobi Stream, or is there a, you know, an additional client portion that does the restrictions?
There's an additional
service
client portion with some authentication. So, and on, you know, most cell phones, you know, is the majority of our market, and they're pretty closed realms anyways, right? I mean, even though like on my Sprint handheld, it's pretty easy to access a RTSP stream in the wild that's compliant. So, for instance, I have I use a variation of Bashpotter to pull down video podcasts nightly and automatically transcode those into the 3GPP format that's compatible with these my Sprint handheld phone. And I can, and it builds like these little web pages, you know, it's kind of like my inbox, and I can then watch those on my phone. And likewise, there's some internet radio stations that are using AAC Plus 2 audio codec and provide an RTSP feed of those. One of them is SOMAFM.com, S-O-M-A. They provide quite a few channels. And those I can play on my phone as well, too. So, it's not too big a deal. In fact, we contributed a patch to this project called GPAC, G-P-A-C. They provide this utility called MP4 Box, and it can do what's called a hinting to MP4 or 3GP files, but the AAC audio track has to be hinted in a special way called LATM for 3GP compliance so that it'll play on these phones. So we contributed that patch and they merged it in. That was pretty cool.
Now again, are these...
It's one of the few contributions to... back to the open source that we've made.
Now, are these GPAC and MBox, are these technologies that run specifically on mobile devices and those mobile devices?
No, this is on, those are run on the server side.
Oh.
Kind
oh.
of ahead of time.
Oh, so this streams to a mobile device.
Yeah, the MP4 box, like if you create an MP4 file, let's say out of Kino,
uh-huh,
then it's unhinted. So you run it through MP4 box, and it will add a couple tracks called the hint tracks. Now you can put that in your a Darwin streaming server movies directory, and then stream it out to RTSP clients. And if you use the LATM hinting option, then and if you comply within certain other constraints as far as resolutions and bit rates and so forth go, then you can play it on a mobile phone as well. Not all of them. It's a vast sea of interoperability issues.
You know what? Speaking of track hinting, could you explain a little more about what track hinting is? Because I know when I was messing around with QuickTime streaming server where I used to work, it was like they said you had to have a hinted stream if you wanted to get the proper performance. And what exactly is a hinted stream? How does a hinted stream differ from just a video that you would pump out a Kino?
Okay, the MP4 file or the .3GP, which is a variation of MP4 file, they contain streams, elementary streams is what we call them, like the raw output of the codec is in like this elementary stream, and the elementary stream is composed of individual frames, and in the case of video, it's, you know, video frames, but in the case of audio, it's kind of variable and dependent what defines a frame per codec. But these frames of data then have to be broken down into packets and turned into RTP packets, real-time transport protocol. And then on these RTP packets, you have timestamps and sequence numbers and so forth, as well as some metadata. So the hinting process is basically applying ahead of time all the information about how to break this elementary stream down into an RTP stream. So that when the server has to, you know, serve it out on demand, then it doesn't have to do the work then. It's all done ahead of time. So the server is kind of dumb in that regard. It's more there to handle multi-users and for handling sessions and so forth. So I had to apply a lot of that knowledge into a live kind of system. So then is
hinting kind of standard? Like, you produce a hinted video with one application. Would it run with any streaming server that supports hinting, or is the hinting specific to a streaming server? The style of hinting, or however hinting's encoded.
It is standardized. And at least in the context of things like MPEG-4 and the Internet Streaming and Media Alliance. So a hinted MP4 should be able to be served out of Darwin Streaming Server, Helix Server, or probably FluMotion. If not now, pretty soon. So
Now the product that you've been working on, I think you had mentioned it the last time you were on the show. What is the name of that streaming server, or that product that does the conversion?
Is it an open source project or something work related?
I thought it was kind of work related, but it was also an open source project.
Are you talking about live.com, live media?
No, I thought you
were.
MLT
Miracle?
I think it's MLT. Weren't you working on that?
Yes. That was developed in the first half of 2004. It was basically a second iteration, second project following up to a previous work that was done in end of 2002, beginning of 2003. That product, that was called DV-1394D, as in Damon.
Uh-huh.
And it was basically a video server. It's a playout type of server. If you have a box that like does DV over FireWire and converts it to analog, or can convert it to an SDI signal, which is uncompressed digital video, then you can hook it into your broadcast facility and play out. So that's what this Indian company, this Indian satellite broadcaster, contracted myself and Charlie Yates to do. So then, so the first version was this DV-based system, cheap, but it was unrealistic to try to do effects and DV encoding in real time, you know, to send anything out.
Uh-huh.
We're not talking about wanting a whole lot of effects, but being able to do some things. So all it could really do was you give it, you throw raw DV files at it, and you could pull them up and scrub through them and play them out, and you could play out multiple things at the same time and manage playlists, and it had a TCP/IP protocol for the remote management, and that worked. And then they said, great, let's do the next one, which is going to be uncompressed out using this SDI technology and real-time effects. So that led into MLT. As the MLT is the framework, and Miracle is the name of the server that was based upon the DV-1394 design. So...
So now, was any of this like the springboard for what you're doing at Mobi, or is Mobi a completely different thing?
No, no, not really. I'm actually using MLT and Miracle at Mobi TV for, it's in my media lab. I use it to provide a high quality SDI output for input into different systems for testing things. But, it's just sort of a dumb thing. I'm not really doing any development on it in the context of my work there. So, what was the question?
The question was was the MLT and the other product you were working on a springboard for what you're doing at Mobi was essentially it.
No, you know what? TV Grab was the springboard for my work at Mobi TV. So. I'm not allowed to really say exactly how we're using it there, but, you know, they were starting to use it, and they wanted to enhance it, and wanted me to help them integrate it into something bigger, and so they hired me to do some additional work. That was the birth of DVGrab 2.0, and... The you know this libIEC 61883? Oh, that's awful to say. But it's like this third generation FireWire library for doing all the I/O on FireWire. In any case, the contract work that I did led to the finalization of that for its 1.0 release. And for its integration into DVGrab. So, we're using it very heavily currently. And when I say heavily, it's like there's, four channels, you know, on a machine, so it's doing simultaneous types of captures, so.
Now then, how this operates is a pull in a live stream, does the conversion and hinting on the fly and spits it back out to the through the service. Is that essentially what it does?
Basically, at a high level. Yeah.
At a high level. So you're not like working on pre-recorded stuff. It's just all, you know, it comes in and it goes right back out.
There's pre-recorded as well. There's some content providers that provide clips, and then those get converted into basically like playlists that play out automatically.
Then is this on demand?
But it's all mostly based upon a live user experience. So you don't have to wade through menus and stuff. You just sort of, you know, couch potato syndrome, just turn it on and start watching and channel surf. So
then it's not on demand at all, is it?
Well, we do provide some on demand for some partners, and we're expanding a little bit more into that area. But the emphasis has been mostly on live stuff. So.
So then how does this all relate to, because I looked, Moby is offering some big names in the media. Fox is on there and a few others.
Yeah, we just got signed a big deal with NBC too.
Yeah, ABC, CNN, all sorts of stuff. How does that relate to digital rights management? I mean, are the companies concerned, the media companies concerned about somebody taking your stream, recording it, and dumping it out there on a torrent site somewhere?
Yes. we're not really doing much with digital rights management because it is streaming, and most digital rights management is sort of geared around more towards managing file downloads and or if you're doing DVR type of stuff and being able to secure the local storage for DVR, which we're not doing yet either. And for the broadband PCTV type of product, there is some, we're using Windows Media with Windows Media DRM to secure that. So
now, are you at liberty to discuss some of the back end of this as to what, like when you're delivering Windows Media, are you using Windows operating system and server type and services to deliver that, or is that done on like you know, you mentioned Darwin that you've used, or is it your own written in-house application that runs on Linux, or how does
the stuff that's going over like the cellular networks is not encrypted or scrambled or anything yet, so because it's a much more closed system, there's been less concern about it. And basically, it seems that there's more concern as the network becomes more public and the quality of the video gets better. You know, like if you're on higher resolution, higher bitrate stuff, then there's a lot more concern than the lower quality stuff for the phones. So, but yeah, it's all, we have a lot of heterogeneity in our systems, and we support a lot of different types of handsets and platforms. So there's a large engineering team porting things around.
So you got your fingers in like all sorts of different operating systems over there and technologies.
Yeah. I actually learned to do some Python programming here. That was pretty cool.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
And that's used for streaming then?
It's not bad. For what?
You use that for the streaming?
No. I can't tell you where what I'm using it for, unfortunately.
Okay, so. No problem. So how does all...
Yeah, I'd get in trouble.
How does all of this relate to, you know, the big project that we're... We're probably most of our audience is interested in, that is Kino.
How does it all relate to that?
Yeah. Or is that the Kino killer?
Thankfully, not too much. You know, I'm glad that there's some separation, that I have this thing where, like, if I'm in periods where I'm just doing a lot of troubleshooting and analysis, or, you know, or meetings and stuff, and I start to go through some coding withdrawal, you know? And then that seems to be when I'm spending more time on Kino, interestingly. It's my fix, so to speak.
So,
the only really thing is that, you know, like I said, there's this work on that FireWire library and dbGrab. That's related to Kino a little bit. So, you could say that some of the knowledge of what I've learned at work has applied to some of Kino's exports as well. Although I haven't... The export scripts that are in Kino are kind of difficult in that I cannot do a whole lot of optimization of those things involving a lot of options, because it makes them more brittle depending upon which, you know, FFmpeg version the user is using. So I try to be very careful about the changes that I'm making to those scripts, because I want people to be able to use FFmpeg, any version from the last 2 years. So,
so how's Kino doing?
Pretty good. I haven't... You know, there hasn't been major growth for the last couple of years. What I tried to do at the beginning of 2006, I said kind of to myself that I wanted to make a 1.0 release. I wanted to kind of wind it down. And in the process of that, I want to, you know, really kind of refine it and patch some gaps that exist within the existing framework, and then pull the plugins together and take certain features and extend them just a little bit to make them a little more universal, so to speak. And just try to polish it up. Because I wanted to be able to move on to something else, but also make something that was not just done, but a little, try to polish it a little bit and hold people over for a little while, you know, while they're maybe waiting on some other project to get better.
So,
does that make sense?
I hear what you're saying. Now, I had, and I believe, Pat, you had said this last week, that the 1.0 version is the final release of Kino and there won't be any more Kino after this?
No, not exactly. Basically, all I plan to do is if address crashing bugs or simple brokenness type of bugs. If there's something like, let's say, FFmpeg command line options change and I need to make some changes to the scripts, then I'll do that. If there's additional language translations, and when there's additional documentation improvements, to roll those in and make some additional few releases. But the idea is to try to not put too much more effort into it. But, you know, to be honest, it's kind of hard not to. I think I have a compulsion problem.
So you're not abandoning Kino or further development on Kino and just bug fixes that you'll probably end up picking up? Because I'm reading your news. You seem to be saying that you're going back to work on MLT, and because Cadian Live is one of the projects that's adopting MLT, and you see much promise in that area.
Yeah, okay. So the work on Kino continues. I've fixed two little bugs since the 1.0 release. I'm going to do some additional work on the documentation if no one else beats me to it. But I'm also doing a series of screencast tutorials throughout the year. I'm going to try to do 2 per month. You know, so that's a decent rate, something I feel is achievable. I made one with, you know, the 1.0 release. Did you see that? Did you see that screencast demo?
I saw that.
Okay.
Yeah, what did you use for that demo recorder?
Yeah. How did you know?
I think you mentioned that you had bought it when I exchanged emails at some point.
Yeah, maybe on the forums there at GLLTS or something. Yeah. So, anyways, we can come back to that maybe later. But I just put up another one last night that covers capturing. It covers a little bit about FireWire configuration and then capturing and then saving what you captured to a SMILE file with some metadata added. And so I think as I do these, I'll be finding maybe some little problems and fixing those along the way. So could use some help though in the translations and maybe some documentation and documentation translations as well. That would be really cool. That would, I think, help really flesh it out. Now, as far as MLT and KDN Live is concerned, I'm focusing mostly on MLT, and it is a ramp-up type of process because I've been pretty much out of MLT for a couple years. And so I need to spend some time reviewing the code. I'm making a to-do list. And I'm going to try to do some additional documentation as I review the code. And there's some things that I don't like about it that I know I want to change that will be helping KDN Live. When did the KDN Live developer come on your show?
Oh, was that maybe a couple months ago?
November? Yeah.
December, maybe? Somewhere in
there. He's just getting ready for, I think a 0.5 release, I think that's what it called. And, let me look. Anyways, it's looking really good. It's pretty amazing. It's like, wow, when Charlie and I got finished done making MLT, we were like, you know, this could be, this is like the heart of a nonlinear editor inside of, you know, a server, you know, and we were like, well, this could be, you know, a new subsystem for a Keynote 2.0. And, Charlie went on to do some contract work exploring some of those ideas of an editing GUI atop of MLT. And I went back to work on Kino. And I really wasn't ready to make that leap to Kino 2. I didn't think Kino, as it was ready to be abandoned, and because I knew there was quite a few users, and I was getting a lot of feedback, and I knew it was growing in popularity, so I didn't want to just drop it at that time. But I think I've seen some of Charlie's editing front ends on top of MLT, and KDN Live I think is the best of those, of the three options that I've seen.
So we have KDN Live, we have PityV, we have Kino, there's Lives, we have all these potential, you know,
Cinelara.
You know, I'm not going to lump Cinelara in there.
Blender,
Or Blender, because, you know, When I look at Kino, one of the things about Kino that I think stands out from all the other ones is, one, it's easy to use. Two, it's easy to get running on a system. And three, does a pretty damn good job of what it's supposed to do. Now, that, of course, right off the bat, separates it from Cinelera and Blender, because those things are, you know, you put a person in front of Cinelera or Blender and they'll rip their hair out of it, you know, trying to use it. And by person,
they're very intimidating, yeah.
Right. And I'm talking about someone who might say, you know, sit down and do like iMovie or, you know, the Windows equivalent or whatever the heck that's called, Windows Movie Maker. Anyway, Kino seems to like have fit the bill the best out of all those. The other ones like PityV and KDN Live and Lives, which are coming down the pike. The only problem I have with those is I really can't find a distribution that I can install those easily on. I mean, you're always depending upon,
yeah,
you know, these ultra developmental or bleeding edge libraries. They're changing all the time. I mean, I see them as still being further down the pike to be able to, for a standard user to even get a hold of these applications and start playing with them. I mean,
that's certainly true for PTV and Diva, because they were based upon bleeding edge versions of GStreamer and or Mono. You know, KDN Live, back a couple years when it was running on its old backend, was actually a default application in Mandrake at the time.
I think it still is.
Is it?
Yeah. I think he's, yeah, Mandrivo, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I'd be interested in installing it under Ubuntu here, and when I try to do it, it spits back to me that it depends on all these packages, and these packages I won't install because I have a different version installed already, which they have applications depend on those, and it's kind of like a, you know, you end up in the package manager hell with regards to that.
It's
because I'm using Debian-based systems, and that's just the way it's going to be, but like I said, I'm really interested in hopefully these projects, you know, start becoming more accessible on other distributions.
Yeah. KDN Live shouldn't be too bad, because it's still not, they've still not attempted to make a port over to Qt4 or KDE4 libs or anything like that. So, the biggest problem there is MLT. But this, you know, what you're complaining about, people complain about Kino, you know, the same way too, even though, you know, we've tried really hard.
Speaking of complaints, I don't know, I forget which website it was, with Elixir, one of those. People were bitching about Kino, and you responded directly to them.
Uh-huh. I don't know exactly which one you're talking about. There's like,
I saw
been some
Linux.com, I think, was one.
Yeah.
I think on Linux.com there was one you responded to, and there was a couple. There was another one, wasn't there?
Yeah, there's been some a recent flurry of some articles. But I mean, on Kino's own forum, I was getting slammed by some users who wanted to be able to run newer than the versions packaged in Ubuntu. You know, they wanted to be able to run newer releases from Tarball, and they were complaining about dependency hell, and so about the fourth article down on the Kino website, fifth down, I made a step by step. It's actually pretty darn easy. It's the tricky part is just knowing which development packages to get. If you get libglade dev, then that pulls down so many dependencies that, you know, you need for building a GTK2 application that uses Glade.
I guess what the issue is, just to jump in, Dan, is there's a level of frustration that people have, I guess, with this video editing applications in Linux. And they're just like venting, you know? I mean, not for nothing. If you hadn't stepped up to the plate and done this, we wouldn't have anything that's really usable for quite a long time. I mean, yeah, it's still Larry's around now. There's KDE and Lives, and there's other applications. But for the longest time, Kino was the only real video editing application on Linux available, you know?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, you know, before Cinelera, there was Broadcast 2000. You know, that was its predecessor. Do you remember that?
Yeah,
yes,
well,
and it was horrendous to use back then, too.
Well, you know, there's a lot of people who are pretty happy with the way Cinelera has come in the recent years with maturity. And, you know, we're fortunate that there's still some developers who are, you know, in the community version of Cinelera doing some maintenance work, and there is a little bit of cooperation between those developers and the lead developer. I don't know exactly the relationship and how well, but it appears that there's some. Cinelera, you know, it's kind of an oddball, but it's not too bad of an oddball.
Yeah,
I would say.
Don't get me wrong about Cinelera. I mean, it's a fantastic product, but it's like I said, it's very intimidating.
Major learning curve to get into it.
Right. So, you know, Kino, it's been, you know, become quite popular, and I've been fortunate that it's been packaged pretty well by all the distributions, you know, but by that I mean trying to keep up with the versions, and it's become, you know, maybe like some more, a more prominent type of application. Partly because it's just a matter of being persistent and sticking, you know, sticking it out, not having dead spots, trying to be responsive to the community, you know, through support, because it's, you know, it's a feedback system. So even though I'm not getting a whole lot of help in the support area, not as much as I would like. You know, you go to the Kino forums, and it's pretty much just a support forum where I'm doing almost all the answers. But it helps, you know. A lot of times I'll be like, I'll push back or groan, you know, about something someone's saying, and then, you know, a few days later there'll all of a sudden be a change in CVS to address that.
I mean, you can't be expected to maintain all the packages for all the different distributions. I mean,
oh yeah,
you're doing development.
Right, yeah, and not only the development. Like I said, I'm doing the support, been doing a lot of the documentation. You know. Maintaining the website. I had to take over maintenance of the website and do some work on it. So it's a lot of work. It's kind of like open source development is good for obsessive compulsives, I think so. That's a good match. You know what I mean?
I hear you.
Can you hear me? You guys are low on me.
No. Well, yeah. Okay. I'm sorry. I had my microwave.
Hey, where's Lincoln Allen tonight? I haven't heard from them.
Alan just sits in the corner. Doesn't say anything.
You always hear him on the pre-show and the post-show audio, but
Link's sick tonight.
I'm always quiet when it comes to the guests.
Link has the HIV.
Yeah, there's a new article that went up on Linux.com just today. Did you see that? Kino 1.0 release marks shift into maintenance mode. Actually, the author of it sent me a bunch of questions through email, kind of like an email interview. And
oh, Joe. Yeah, we know Joe.
So, yeah. And it was good, those questions. It helped helped me to reflect and kind of like pull my thoughts together. It was like rehearsal for this show, maybe.
Yeah, everyone's pretty down on the whole video editing thing in Linux. And, you know, the whole thing with Linux and open source software is, you know, unless someone steps up and does, you know, something, it doesn't get done. I mean, yeah, you have, what is it, Mean Actor? Now, that's the commercial. That's like $200, uh-huh. That application. It's quite expensive.
Yeah. I was paying attention to Mean Actor a couple of years ago, but I don't know if it's still being maintained or developed.
I think it is. It's the new releases come out in Windows, and then, you know, 6 months later, the Linux version comes out. So it sounds like it is still mm-hmm. maintained. It's just a little behind the Windows version.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it is kind of a frustrating situation. The a lot of people are using Kino versions that are a year or older. There's been a lot of work in the last year to, like I said, to refine it and to make it a more complete package. And a lot of people have bad, you know, experiences from previous years. So I'm hoping that people will be pretty happy with this 1.0 release, and that things like the screencasts will help to accommodate some of Linux shortcomings by showing people how to do things and stuff like that, right?
So I use Kino to do like all like home videos and stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, for that it works great.
Yeah, it's only really designed for, you know, well, I'm using the term design loosely here. It was only really destined for that kind of, you know, home videos, and quick kind of videos to post up on the net. Not really big, serious projects. Although I do have a friend in my neighborhood in California here who's using it in a professional capacity. So, he does a lot of DVD video production. He's actually written some articles in the past for Linux Journal on graphics and video editors. His name's Dan Sawyer.
Okay.
He hasn't had anything in Linux Journal for a couple of years, though. But, he'll run into some problems, and then I go over there and look at them and made some changes. There was this big new feature that was introduced sometime last year called audio locking, and his need to resolve an AV sync problem on a long DVD. This is a DVD that was like an hour and a half long. One continuous shot.
Yeah.
You mean as far as the DVD? Okay.
Because that happens a lot when you have like long segments, right? The audio goes out of sync.
No, not really. It's more related to this thing, this nature of consumer DV called unlocked audio, and with NTSC you can't have the same number of samples per frame because of its screwy frame rate, and so you have a sort of a sequence of what the sample should be. But as you're doing editing, then you're taking some frames that have too few samples and other frames that have too many samples, and they all get sort of accumulated in different areas. You know, these shortness or the overage gets accumulated in different areas. And then some cameras, some DV cameras, just have a poor clock and over a long duration, yeah, you could have, and like you're saying, in one long shot, the audio could just drift. You don't notice that too much when you're just playing it in the camera because the audio and video are interleaved by the nature of DV, so it's able to keep it in sync. But when you do things like transcoding, where you're going down to these raw intermediates, let's say, maybe it's just internally within the program, then all of a sudden the audio track is either too long or too short relative to the video track, because the audio sampling clock on the camera was perhaps wrong, slightly off, and over time that accumulates. But like I said, it's due to various issues, this thing called unlocked audio, where the samples are allowed to vary per frame around the normal. And then these problems accumulate. So he had this problem, and I said, well, you know, let's do this. Let's export all the audio into a WAV file. Let's see how long it says it is. Oh, you know, it's the wrong amount. Let me do some math here. Well, if we resample it to this amount, then it would be the exact number of samples that is for the movie duration. So we do that, and then we figure out a way using uncompressed PCM streams to tell FFmpeg to make something that's like, let's say, 48,005 hertz. A raw PCM stream goes into a WAV file, but the WAV file just says it's 48,000 hertz. You see what I'm saying? So there's this fudging there that takes place. And then we dub that back into Kino, and then he did an export, and it solved the problem. Well, then the trick was, how do you make that an automatic process? You know, it was like a 12-step program, man. A manual process to do all this and to do all the math, and it was messy. Not to mention these big files being created in the meantime. So, you know, I had to do some thinking for a while and figure out how to make it kind of like do it on the fly. It's not totally on the fly, but half the process is. So when you do an export now out of Kino, there's this first stage that takes a while, called locking audio, and it'll basically, what it's doing there is it's looking at, it's counting up all the audio samples in your entire movie to figure out what the actual number of samples is, and then it compares it to what the ideal or correct number of samples ought to be, and then it figures out a resampling frequency. And then it does that resampling on the fly when it's actually doing the exporting. So. Was that too deep? Was that too technical?
No, that's
not boring. I'm boring you guys.
No, you're not boring us.
This is good stuff.
And the person, the people that you'd be boring, screw them. We don't care.
So, I know that was a problem that was haunting people for a long time. It's not a foolproof kind of thing either. I mean, it can still be thrown off, because the whole approach of that assumes that your discrepancies from the ideal sample count are kind of evenly distributed over the movie. If you have, like, this one quarter of the movie where the samples are continually low for each frame, so it's all the discrepancy is lumped in this one area, then it's going to throw it off. And so, but it's still, it's a rather nice feature to have in, you know, a DV tool. It's a rather advanced feature, and it's a problem for a lot of people working with DV tools, regardless of their platform. And really no other DV tool that we have on Linux will be able to do this as it stands right now. MLT doesn't do it right now. So that might be something I have to solve again.
Let me ask you a question. Oh. With video editing software, what is the hardest aspect? Is it, you know, the whole, you know, positioning when you're going through the editing, knowing where you are and keeping track of where you're going? What exactly is the most difficult aspect of it?
Oh, man, that's a hard question. For one, I'm thinking of just general software practice. And this applies to any kind of decent-sized project where you have to be careful that you're not introducing bugs or introducing regressions and so forth. So introducing memory problems and, you know, you get too far along down the road and someone's reporting a memory problem, then it can be pretty hard to track it down. I guess you could say memory management is a big aspect of it, but that's sort of generic. And you're asking about something specific to video.
Memory management is true of C++ in general.
Yeah,
anything you allocate, you got to deallocate when you're done with
right.
it. Otherwise, you get memory leaks, right?
Right. So, some of the most difficult things is dealing with aspect ratios and the oddities of NTSC isms that creep into our video world even today. You know, you know about the horrors of NTSC, I'm sure. Do you? Anyways.
I know PAL is better. You know, my travels over through the years going to Europe, you know, the old days, you know. PAL seemed to be nicer than NTSC. It seemed to be, it's more pixels, right, in resolution, it's just less frame rates, right?
Yeah, it is more resolution.
NTSC, never the same color.
It also, it has a little bit better color subsampling, chroma subsampling, you know. When at least in terms of the digital representation of it. The frame rates of NTSC really throw things off. But aspect ratio handling can be really tricky, and seeking around can be very tricky, right? DV is so nice because seeking is really simple, because every frame is standalone. You know, you don't have to worry about finding keyframes. And with raw DV files, it's constant bitrate, so you can just take the number of frames times the number of bytes per frame and just seek that much into a file. You know, there's some people who do DV editing with the DD command. I'm waiting for a reaction here.
They're masochists, right?
Absolutely, yeah. but it's reliable, and you know, DV is a very durable type of format. You know, it's been around since about 1995. Hasn't changed much. Still is pretty darn good quality, even though it is bulky, you know. But we have a lot of tools to work with it now, and you know, and it has a way to keep audio and metadata associated with it nicely. And you run into with a lot of other formats, like, you know, with AVI files, MP4 files, and transport streams, a lot of interoperability issues.
So all these codecs present more issues than it's hard.
Yeah,
to
you know, there's a vast sea of complexity and interoperability issues in the area of the formats and codecs. And you know, another new feature that was added to Kino last year was this import script. Have you heard of that?
heard about it. I haven't actually had the opportunity to try it out yet.
It's really kind of simple. I don't know exactly what motivated me to do it, if I thought of it myself or if I was pushed to do it or not. But, you know, obviously it can be nice to bring other things besides DV into the editor and edit it with your DV, right?
Oh, yeah.
I'm not just talking about pictures and audio, but other videos, you know, maybe something you pull off of a DVD or something you download from archive.org. There's some royalty-free videos and stuff like that.
Night of the Living Dead.
So, you know, like I said, when I was making these automatic video downloads through RSS feeds from my telephone, and I have some scripts that automatically transcode it, and sort of during the development of that, I figured out ways to do that for DV as well and make it pretty darn universal, generic, and reliable. You know, basically an any to DV using a combination of MPlayer and FFmpeg. So I thought, well, you know, if I put it into a script, that's one step forward, you know, and make the script available. And then if I just make it so that, you know, if it's in a menu item, you can, you know, just launch the script from a menu item. That's one way. And I thought, no, I'll just make it so that when it fails to open a DV file because it detects it's not a DV file, then I'll just ask the user if they want to convert it, and I'll run it through this script. And I'll not even make any kind of user interface for it except for this cancellation dialogue. So you don't get things like an estimation of when it will be done, you know, in a full progress. That can be really tricky because
it's done when it's done, right?
Yeah, it can be very difficult for some of these tools to accurately state what the video duration is, let alone it's giving you it as a text output on, like, standard error. And then you have to deal with, if you're parsing that, then you have to deal with all the different versions and the way they may have changed the way that information is portrayed. So I was like, I'm not going there. So it just creates a DV file in the same directory where the foreign file lives. We'll call it a foreign file. And it was looking pretty good until, let's see, about, I think, the release before this last one, people were reporting some problems, and there was some kind of a large, because what it was doing, it was using MEncoder to make an AVI file that's using lossless codecs, and then FFmpeg would read that lossless AVI file and convert it to DV. And so there crept up some incompatibilities in the large AVI file, intermediate file there. So I had to figure out a little different way. But in the end, it was all good. I think it's better now because it's using pipes between the two processes. So it better leverages multiprocessors, you don't have this bulky intermediate file, and it got around this AVI incompatibility. But it's not a foolproof thing. I don't think there's anything that can be truly universal and handle everything that you would throw at it. So, I know a lot of people have been reporting some problems, and there seems to be a general trend of that. It has a fallback mechanism where if it doesn't see MEncoder in the path, then it will just use FFmpeg. And I think there's a greater risk of success when you do not have MEncoder. Does that make sense? But I think that having that is really opening up Kino now to a lot more people. I think a lot of people in the past sort of just said, well, this is not for me because I don't have a DV camera, or, you know, I don't want to have to figure out how to transcode to DV every time I want to edit a video, right? So I think this is helping a lot, making it a more universally appealing editor, you know. But as you do that, you just sometimes open the door to more criticism.
Everybody loved the bitch.
you add like a little feature, and then it's like, well, you know, it should go this step further, and it's like, no. Like, for instance, the DVD video output, for example, well, some people wanted to be able to make the menus for you, and you know, it's like, no, just use another tool for that.
QDVD author.
Yeah. And there is QDVD author integration within Kino. You can write within Kino, just, you know, when you use export MPEG and make a DVD video, you can, from this option menu, choose to a DVD authoring script to run. And one of the scripts is to open it up in QDVD author when it's done exporting. And it goes right into there. So that's really cool.
It's good that you guys,
got
together. Yeah, because you start communicating with Varel, right?
Yeah. I mean, at the beginning, I think he was trying to advocate using some other XML file format besides DVD author's XML file format. And I was like, well, you know, Kino's already outputting this minimal DVD author XML, and I imagine there's quite a few people who start writing their DVD author XML by hand and then realize that they don't want to when they want to get into the menus and stuff, and they maybe want to just be able to open that in QDVD author. So I think the tool should be able to take in the DVD author XML as a format. I think DVD Styler or Tovid, maybe one. I think they should take DVD author XML as an import or an, you know, a project file format as well. It would open.
Tovid's a nice application. I've used that quite a bit in the past.
Yeah.
And that's like a real nice Swiss Army knife kind of video application. It's great at converting different codecs back and forth.
It really excels at just sort of automating transferring whatever videos you may have downloaded to DVD videos. Is that right? That's kind of where it's geared towards. Is that what you say?
Yeah, downloading, say, like you down one of those XVID files off the internet and you want to convert it to an MPEG-2 to watch on your DVD player.
Yeah.
Stuff like that, it excels, I think.
Right. And that's what a lot of people want to do. And a lot of people just are happy with using AVI DMUX, too. You know, just to do some converting of videos with some filtering.
That program actually has a good feature. I was able to, using AVID DMUX too, I was able to strip out audio from a video file. At that, it was great at.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's what it's named after, DMUXing. Yeah, basically what you did was DMUXed and you just saved out like the video track. Is that right?
The audio track as like a WAV file.
Yeah, you know, people have asked me to expand the export scripts in Kino. You know, they're tucked under this export other tab, and people want more user interface to that, and it's not really designed for that. It would be a lot of work to try to develop something, and it would make the scripts really complicated as well. But, you know, if you want to do some more advanced type encoding, then you can, within Kino, export it as a DVAVI and then load that into AVI DMUX too. And then you can tweak to your heart's content. Well, maybe not to your heart's content. You know, the command line tools always have more options, right?
Of course
yeah,
they
more,
do.
More complicated to get it using. You know, when people bring up, you know, interface, it's all about usability and making it easier for people to use.
Yeah, you know, anytime you add a new user interface element to an application, it's a new rabbit hole. Because you're like, oh, no, you know, I didn't add tooltips to this. Now I have to go back and add tooltips, you know. And then all the translators have to then, it has to trickle down. And then you're like, you know, oh, I didn't add a label that identifies what the unit is for this number field, right? Oh, you know what? I can't allow negative numbers, so I have to go in and, you know, change that. So there's like this endless little tweaking, and that's what a lot of the last year of Kino was, and especially in the FX UI, was just adding all that little detail, tooltips and labels and on the all the numeric fields to identify, well, what does this number refer to, you know? Make sense? Yeah.
Well, anytime you mention, like, command line, you know, for most people, the eyes just glaze over, you know?
Yeah. You know, I know there's a lot of activity on other forums, like MPlayer and FFmpeg and Doom 9, all kinds of complex command lines, all sorts of machinations people are going through. And but there's a lot of Kino users that's just, it goes way beyond what they're capable of, maybe, or just wanting to do, you know. There's a lot of people who just are doing other development, and they just want to make a family video. It's like me. It's like I do all this work on Kino, and then I'm just expecting all the other applications on my desktop to work properly, because I don't use a whole lot of other things, but you know, when I do, I hope it'll work, and I understand how to make it work. And unfortunately, I don't get to participate enough in the feedback process on other projects. So I'm grateful that there's a lot of, well, there's a fair number of people providing feedback to me on Kino and choosing to participate in that.
It's difficult because there's only so many hours in the day that you're able to do things, and I guess you gotta pick your battles, you know?
Yeah. And then you guys, I guess you guys have to keep on top of the news and playing with things, you know, when you get, and then you have to do the show. So I know this show's a fair amount of work for you guys too.
There's no work at all involved in this show.
You guys say that. You say, yeah, you just show up and do the show live, you know, no editing, whatever.
That's it.
That's
but
pretty
you,
much what we do.
You do realize, though, that you're, like, trying to keep on top of things and you know, like, what was it, ZoneMinder. You know, you had to go out there and spend a little time scoping out what ZoneMinder is and all that, right?
We usually do that when
actually,
the guest's on the show.
somebody suggested we talk to those guys, so.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Which is fine, you know. That's great that people suggest, you know, topics and guests they want to hear from.
No, usually we do try and you know, guests coming on, we try and play around with whatever they've been working on or something like that. Sometimes it's not easy to do. ZoneMinder. You know, if you don't have a camera, it's kind of hard to mess around with the application. But, mm-hmm. You know, do some research on it.
Yeah.
That's the pre-show stuff.
Yeah, you guys, what kind of audio tools are you working with nowadays?
We are.
I've been playing around with our door.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is, you look at the interface, it's kind of like Blender a little bit, or Cinelara. You look at it and you go, holy
crap.
Yeah,
I'm quite familiar with it. Yeah, it is intimidating, and the first step is one of those things where you're just like, I don't even know how to get the damn audio in here.
Yeah.
Right?
The documentation is pretty poor on their website. But, I mean, don't get me wrong, it's a fantastic application,
and
those guys have done amazing work. And it's growing, you know, every couple months with every release, it just gets better. But it's you look at it, it's very, you know, I look at what I know what to do with it. I barely know how to scratch the surface with it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I have used it a little bit in the past. Not for when I wanted to do something conveniently, but when I felt like exploring and when I wanted to play around with some Jack stuff. But the lead developer, his name is Paul Davis. You should try to get an interview with him.
Yeah, I've tried to contact him a few times.
He was able to work on it full time for many years. He did well off, I think, through being involved with Amazon.com early on, right? And then was able to fund his development full time. Gotten some help, but he just started kind of. Really laying it out to the community as far as saying that not just wanting donations, but asking people to make monthly donations, which is pretty interesting, you know. I think last month he got a whole bunch of one-time donations that added up to like $8,000.
Yeah, I contributed
to that.
That's
great, yeah. I just found out about this. I forget what brought me to his website, but and I was looking on there, and then we were talking about the manual. They did just do some improvements to their user manual, and they said that they're going to try to move to some kind of a wiki-based system for collaboratively updating the manual, and. That is pretty challenging. If you want to make a kind of wiki system that where you can export all the text out of it, you know, all the documentation, and hopefully, you know, keeping all the style and form, some of the formatting, and make that available in other means, you know, like through online help. There's not a lot of options out there, and.
Well, As programmers, none of us want to do documentation. That's like the very last thing on our minds.
Yeah. Well, another thing that I did last year on Kino was to overhaul the documentation system. For so long, it just distributed like 10 HTML files that it launched in a web browser. Okay? And so I wanted to jump on board with the sort of community standard of using DocBook XML, and on GNOME desktop, it uses the Yelp application to display the DocBook natively, and then you can convert the DocBook into HTML and PDF and stuff like that. And there's some most projects, people just edit the XML directly in a text editor, you know, and they manage the revisions through the source code repository, you know, source code management system. There are some GUIs for it, but I wanted to be able to use a wiki, so I did some research, and the Python-based MoinMoin wiki has some support for it, but I found this other PHP-based wiki I want other people to know about. It's on SourceForge at doc-book.sourceforge.net. And it's a PHP web application. Not perfect. I've had some problems with it, but the code was clean. I've been able to go in and make the changes and fixes that I felt are needed. And so that's available now on Kino website. We had a guy already use it to make a French translation, so it does support multiple languages. And it has full source code revisioning. And you only need to know, you're only editing, you know, each little topic on a separate wiki page. So you just need to know a little bit of wiki text, syntax, and it'll automatically convert it to DocBook XML. And then you could actually switch over and edit the XML if you need to do something differently, if you want to do something that's not within the realm of the wiki syntax. And then you can go back and you can click on the wiki tab to edit it again in wiki text. And you can do this sort of mixed wiki and DocBook XML editing. You can upload pictures and refer to them. And then it all goes into Subversion as a back end, so you can manage the revisions. And then there's in the admin interface, one click, make downloadables. And it goes and converts it into all the different formats, plain text, HTML, what's called chunked and non-chunked, and tars them up and puts them into the download folders. And then all I have to do is I have to drag the XML tarball and the HTML tarball into my Kino directory. And I had to do some work on Kino to make it work with it. And but there you go. So it's a fully online collaborative wiki-based DocBook editing system. And so I'm hoping maybe some other developers will try to resume development on that project, because it pretty much went dead. And I'd be happy to provide my changes.
Maybe one of our listeners will pick it up.
Yeah, yeah.
Doubtful they're lazy.
How are we doing on time?
About 20 minutes.
Okay.
So Dan, what new and latest greatest toys have you been playing with? In terms of audio video,
it's
I know.
TV.
What do you think?
Yeah, you've been talking a lot about Myth TV and FireWire cable boxes, right?
Right, to pull down high definition content from HD cable boxes.
Right. Well, that's based upon this library that I told you about, libiec 61883. It provides the MPEG-2 transport stream handling over the FireWire. So my work on that, I didn't do all the work myself, but my work on that facilitated that capability. And then for the longest time, the Myth TV users were just using this example utility that came with the library to do the capturing. And it wasn't really a fully integrated type of thing. But now there is this, a library-based FireWire integration into Myth TV. Have you actually started using it?
No. I got my box, my new version of the box, in pieces. I haven't actually put it together. I've been really busy doing work around the house and stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, me and my wife are expecting our second child, so I'm like, scrambling to get things done around the house.
Yeah.
It'll get done soon.
So I didn't, the developer working on that FireWire integration was on the FireWire mailing list asking for some assistance in some area, and so I was like, you know what? I'm going to check this out, because I haven't really gotten into Myth TV. And I said, let me see if I can help. So I went through the effort of setting that up just as a back end. And I did not want to set up a front end. I used to work for this company where we were working on sort of PC-based media consoles. It's a big story. But anyways, I know it can be a lot of trial. And I had already established in my home theater the usage of this thing called a high-definition network DVD player as sort of a front end for things. It can't do any kind of DVR type of stuff. It cannot do that. But, for instance, all these video blogs that I subscribe to are automatically transcoded into MPEG-4 AVIs that I can watch over it. Any kind of high definition that I transport streams that I capture through FireWire off the cable box, I can watch through it in full high def, and it's really good.
That's what NetTV pulls off, right? The transport stream.
But instead of using like a PC and trying to get your video output of the PC to work good at high definition, which is pretty challenging, so this is just a $250 DVD player that plays it out at, you know, as 1080i, no hassles, and I can pause it during the playback of that transport stream, and you know, fast forward, rewind. And it plays things like, you know, my audio collection and stuff like that, as well as DVDs. So I just wanted to basically use MythTV as an automated recording back end so I could, watch them through this network DVD player. And the MythTV was beautiful because, I was able to go in and add some keywords, you know, I was able to say, well, let's download every unique episode of Family Guy that you find across all channels, you know. So now I got this quickly, in a matter of a couple weeks, this huge backlog of TV that I haven't been able to watch. all these Family Guy episodes, and I really like King of Queens sitcom.
you ever seen The Venture Brothers?
No, uh-uh.
It's a very funny show. It's part of Adult Swim.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of a goof of, these guys have gotten me into it. It's kind of a goof of, like, Johnny Quest.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay.
Go Team Venture.
It's very funny.
It's hilarious.
Go Team Venture, yes.
And Aqua Teen, too. Have you watched Aqua Teen?
Yeah.
A little bit. Aqua Teen Hunger Force?
Yeah. That show rocks.
Are these all, cartoons,
animation.
Yeah, they're all on Adult Swim.
Yeah,
Assy McGee. Have you watched that?
I'm kind of old, man. I'm 37, and I know you guys aren't that much younger, but
I'm the same age.
I can barely tolerate something like Ren and Stimpy. I don't like these wacky, really cartoons.
Well, do you remember,
you like Venture Brothers?
Damn youngins, I tell you.
Do you remember Johnny Quest?
Johnny Quest was great.
You remember, like, Johnny Quest and Harvey...
Kind of, but
and Birdman. Old Hanna-Barbera.
Oh, yeah.
Cartoons, yeah. C-Lab, 2020.
Harvey Birdman's not on anymore.
They keep bringing it back, though.
Oh, I know. Myth is waiting for it, but it hasn't been on in quite a while.
So, yeah, the Myth TV is really awesome for that. Because I also recently got a Comcast DVR box... And it's not very convenient at all. I can't just type in, you know, part of a title name and then say, record all that, you know? You have to, like, do a lot more work to do this kind of automated batch recording of your, whatever your favorite thing is. So that's one toy. I don't know. Mostly I just try to keep from getting too grumpy. Having kids and...
You know, let me ask you that question there. You just went off, you just released 1.0 of Kino. You talked about all these projects you're considering contributing to or you want to help out with. You have three kids. You have a full-time job. When do you find the time to fit all this in?
Well,
and you don't need a MythTV box.
I get a
MythTV. That's the distraction.
Now you have to, most, you know, a lot of people, you know, when they look at Kino, they're like, wow, you know, it sure does go slow. It hasn't had a, you know, made a lot of features. It's been in development for 6 years, and because I don't work on it full time. It goes through waves. I'll go through periods where I'm doing a fair amount of work, maybe like, 20 or so hours a week, 20 to 30 maybe. And then there will be periods where I hardly even touch it. But in the last couple years, it's become something that's pretty steady, light work. It's just sort of a hobby, a pastime kind of thing where I just do a little bit here and there. It's my, I don't use the computer for a whole lot more than doing that, you know. I got my stepson watching YouTube for 5 hours a day. And the kids' other little daughters, they're playing all the Flash games on the web for kids. And then I just work on these open source projects. That's my entertainment. It's just a matter of sticking with it and not trying to do too much, trying to resist maybe some pressure. There's some community peer pressure to do more, better, faster. You know what I mean? And, I'm amazed about how some developers are able to try to scratch out a living while trying to work full-time on their project, you know, not being regularly employed. Like the Live developer, he's done an amazing amount of progress, but it seems like it's a full-time activity, and he struggles. I know, he's been struggling financially. And in the case of, I think the Diva developer, the impression I got was that there was a lot of activity and maybe some burnout. Well, there was a fair amount of frustration as well with, he was dealing with as far as some of the libraries that he was working with.
I think he went to go work for Nokia, that guy, the guy from Nokia.
Yeah, yeah. So that's kind of a factor. But, you know, I think a lot of projects get started and then they fizzle out because there's a fair amount of burnout. And there's been some times when it's approached that for me, but I just tried to keep it as a comfortable, happy experience. You know what I mean? It's my happy place that I go to. That's what I was telling you. It's almost a compulsion. We'll be lucky if I can keep my hands off of Kino and go work on bigger and better things.
But what could be bigger and better or more important than Kino in the Linux community?
Oh, yeah. I really do think... As long as Jean Baptiste, the KDN Live, lead developer now, doesn't burn out, I get a little worried because he's making so much great progress. I don't want him to burn out, you know. I want him to be able to be focused on the UI, and then myself can revisit the back end to address a few things. It kind of boggles me that he's, able to keep doing more on KDN Live, and I'm thinking, you're not bumping into, limitations of MLT, it's like something that's hardly been worked on, I think that kind of speaks a bit to the quality of MLT, that it's been durable, and still a very viable solution without having to require a lot of maintenance. Oh, by the way, Josh Shaka was using MLT, but
yeah, what happened
recently?
To that?
They they moved off of that. Their newer versions are using something called Open Media Libs or Open Libraries. I think it's on SourceForge Project as Open Libraries. But they, when Charlie was there, they decided to develop something anew and to stop using MLT. So, I'm not going to comment on Josh Shaka anymore.
He's dead. It's dead to you, isn't it?
All I know is that I did not want to help out on that project, and I don't want to really say why, but
we know why.
So
we do.
Yeah. They didn't have kind of more to say about Keno. A little bit of trash talking.
It's not about that at all. So, you know, it has a company behind it now, and so that company is in control of everything pretty much now. So, you could say that's one aspect of it. Interestingly, along those lines, when what's his name, Joe Brockmeyer, yeah, when he sent me that email with the questions, one of the questions was, do you think Cadian Live is going to mature into this professional level tool? And I said, well, frankly, I don't really care about making something for professional usage since I'm not getting paid to work on it. Now, as far as it being professional quality or level, you know, it's a very relative type of thing. You know, like I said, I know some people using Keno in a professional capacity, and nobody thinks of it as a professional tool. I also said a lot of what's available in the market is so extremely sophisticated through many, many years of development by teams working full-time that it's, you know, it's really hard to say that it will be comparable with them and continue to be comparable. I think just have to let time work to our advantage, because a lot of times companies' products, you know, they become deceased, you know, and so there's a lot of redevelopment in commercial realms, and unfortunately that's been sort of the case in the FOSS community in the area of video editing for the last decade. But if there's more cooperation, then certainly in the long term, perhaps, I think there can be something. I think Blender is that sort of example. It's shaping up into something along those lines. But it was fortunate to have this initial corporate development that, you know, had a team behind it and got it off to a good start, you know, to bootstrap that project. So, I don't know. What else is going on? Oh!
Novell's all over the world. Oh, what were you going to say? Go ahead. It sounded important.
I was just remembering about that weird principal story around your area.
Okay.
I forwarded that story on to some people. No.
Yeah. Doesn't get any better than that, does it?
Man. Yeah. That's really crazy.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know, the principal of Nichman Middle School in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, was arrested in his office on charges of trafficking in meth. When they came to arrest him, they found him naked watching gay porn and surrounded by adult toys.
Yeah.
That's special.
Yeah.
Great.
And apparently he
your
was...
Tax, world.
your tax money at work.
Yeah, he was making like 90 plus thousand a year or something and living on crack row in Allentown. So, yeah. Good stuff. I'm glad I got out of there.
You can't make that up.
No. I don't even know where your life goes after that. I mean, really.
Mm-hmm.
They'll find him swinging from the jail cell soon or something. I mean, you how do you come back from that?
It's only a matter of time, yeah.
I mean, I would be really interested to know what path in life you have to take that leads there. I mean, to all those bad decisions to wind up like that. That's, wow. Alan, you've been in that position.
No, actually I haven't. Sorry about that. Yeah. Sorry to disappoint.
You can't make that up, man.
Yeah, what do you have stuff like that going on in California?
I tell you what, in California, you have a lot of everything. It's hard to make generalizations, you know. You know, some people say, oh, you know, there's just a bunch of liberals out there here, you know. But that's not the case, you know. There's a Republican governor. there is a lot of everything. Yeah, there's... but there's also, you know, I'm not really that in touch, unfortunately, with a lot of the things going on. You know, like we were talking about earlier, I got all these commitments and things that I'm doing. But I like to read the local newspaper for my neighborhood, and especially the sheriff's report.
Hear about all the
and
breaking.
You can see things like, you see things like, well, this guy went to jail for jaywalking. Seriously, it seems like, you know, a police state it sometimes, but what it is that the police take advantage of every opportunity to check someone for outstanding warrants. So they didn't really go to jail for jaywalking. They got checked into because they were jaywalking, and then they found warrants, and then they had outstanding warrants and went to jail. But my son, he got a ticket for crossing the crosswalk when the crosswalk light was red. I didn't know you could get a ticket for that. I thought those were just like guidelines, you know, the crosswalk light.
How old's your son?
15.
And how much was the ticket then?
It was like $115.
Holy mackerel.
Yeah.
Now, did he have to pay the fine, or did they, like, say, well, you could either pay the fine or do community service?
I'm not aware that there was an option.
I don't know if there was. I know, yeah. Like, a lot of times with juvenile stuff like that, that they sometimes consider community service.
Yeah.
$150.
$115.
Oh, $115. Still.
Yeah.
He's halfway to buying a
we made him pay half of it. Yeah.
Well, did he learn his lesson? Not to cross when a cop's around?
Doubtful when I was, like, you know, bitching right in front of him, you know, about not at him, but at the situation that he had to get a ticket for that kind of silly thing. One time he was, he got out of school early because of the school, you know, they were canceled early, but, and he was walking home and, he picked up a fire extinguisher, out of the trash, out of someone's trash. And he was walking along with it, and then the police picked him up because they thought he was being truant. And, you know, he explained to them, and they were like, well, what's going on with this fire extinguisher, you know? And So they made him show the house where he got it, and then they ticketed the person because you're not allowed to dispose of the fire extinguishers.
Man. Wow. Are they watching your son or something? Holy mackerel, poor guy.
How much is going on in that town, huh?
Yeah, man. It's a little crazy. But the, you know, the garbage, I don't know what it's like in your town, but in Cincinnati, you could just put all sorts of stuff out in large quantities of it, but it's pretty tightly controlled here in California. And, it's interesting, they have the garbage trucks, they have these huge robotic claws that pick the garbage can up and dump it instead of men, you know, grabbing the cans.
Yeah, I see that around here.
Yeah, they have, like, that there too.
And yeah,
the
I'm in Virginia, so yeah. I'm like, wow. I mean, that's just lazy.
Very efficient, right?
I guess so. I mean, it seems overkill for a garbage can.
It is very efficient. And there's probably less workman comp claims.
That's true.
You know, you think about sometimes when I put stuff out in the trash, I get, when I was in Cincinnati, that is, and then I'd be, like, worried about trying to make a label, you know, saying, you know, be careful, there's some broken glass here, or, you know. But in any case, so the flip side to this story is that, well, when the postman comes, instead of, you know, walking to every house, he drives to every second house and actually stops the vehicle, takes the keys out, delivers to the two houses, and then comes back, turns the vehicle on, and drives to the next two houses.
Really?
So I don't think that's exactly a model of efficiency, you know.
How far away are the houses from one another?
Well, this is very dense area, you know. It's the houses are only like 20 feet away from the edge of the road, and they're like 10 feet away from one another.
That's odd, because like my old neighborhood where I used to live in, houses were you know, about that close together. The postman would stop at the end of the block, pull out all the mail for that block, and walk down the street, mm-hmm. and walk back up the other side.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, well.
That's something.
Curious things in life that we notice, you know.
Wow. Hell. Well, I guess we got to start cutting it up, or closing it up here. It's 10. After 10:30, we're off of BinRev.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. But we still stream. We have our own servers. You listen to BinRev? Binary Revolution Radio?
Who, me?
Yeah, you. I know the other guys, too.
No, I are you referring to the show or to the music on BinRev?
No, the show, actually. The show.
No, I just get it as a podcast.
Yeah, I mean, do you listen to the podcast?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, Stink.
Great show.
Stank Dog and Droops and Black.
No,
Rocket.
I just listened to your show. That's it.
Well, that's not good. You need to get...
Your show is like 2 hours, man. I don't have that much time.
Yeah, you need.
I'm like, who was it who was saying in an earlier show, I think Pat, that you can't listen to it and do work at the same time? That when you're doing the work, then it's too hard to follow the show?
That's true of any podcast, really.
Well, no, that's I find that problem. That's when I listen to Twit and Security Now and everything.
When just tune it out in the background.
Yeah, when I don't need to pay too much attention.
I can only listen to music when I'm working. I can't listen to podcasts.
Yeah. I have a long drive. I have about an hour and 15-minute drive each way, so I have plenty of time to listen to different shows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I try to listen to it in the car.
There you go. Give it to your mailman. He's got a lot of time in the car.
Seriously.
I listen to a lot of this internet radio station from my hometown, it was on FM, and then they went internet. It's called WOXY.com.
Well, they're going to work
too much.
They're working on killing that.
Yeah, I've been reading about that. That's a shame. Yeah,
that is.
This has been the little radio station that could. It's, I don't know, over 20 years old. It'd be going on 30.
That really stinks.
Yeah.
I mean, really. Do they need... It's ridiculous. I blame the streaming companies for that, particularly the ones streaming to cell phones and mobile technology. They're the ones...
I blame the media companies.
No.
They want to bleed everybody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. How soon until they turn their sights on your market there, Dan? Huh?
Well, we have some radio products, and I don't know the licensing model for those. I'm just more or less involved in the technology. But we, you know, we pay a lot of for content rights. But, you know, fortunately, we've been successful at it. Yeah. My feeling is, you know, if a content owner wants to, you know, charge money and protect them, you know, that's their prerogative. There will always be other things that are free or less expensive or less onerous. You know, there's the world just keeps growing in the amount of numbers of options available to us, right? It's insane how much stuff there is out there, you know, as media, and you know, it's like this whole I don't do anything with video games, but the, you know, there's this whole world of video game and video gaming production, and let alone music production and film production and video production and internet video production, and it's just insane, isn't it? So
did you see, you spoke about watching...
Premium content will, I think the premium content, when I say that, I mean the really better stuff, like a lot of the stuff HBO creates, and some of the networks. You know, there will be continued justification for them to be able to sort of keep things under tight control, because there's still the demand for it. Increasingly, I think there will be less demand relative to the convenience factors that's affected by controls. Oh, speaking of which, my neighbor the other day gave me a Vista DVD.
You're lucky.
Microsoft Vista. He was able to get it through work. Some new machines that they got, they just wanted to run Windows XP. And they got these forms to be able to mail away for the Vista. And he did that, and he gave it to me. He knows I'm a Linux head, so I don't know why he gave it to me.
You fighting with your neighbor?
Good question.
Anybody else would have had to give up their firstborn.
Well, you know, I actually had this spare laptop where Ubuntu is currently installed. And I could just as easily reinstall it if I needed to. But so I thought, okay, I'll give it a try on there. Well, I didn't make it past entering the product key, which was early in the process. I kept typing it in, you know, and checking it, and it wouldn't accept it. Now, when he handed me the package, the marketing material on the front did not say anything about it being an upgrade. You know, it just said Windows Vista Business.
It's a downgrade.
Business edition. Yeah. But I noticed on the seal where the product key is, it says something like OEM Express upgrade or something like that. So I think it was able to, you know, based upon the product key, and check something on the hardware to make sure that I had a specific model or a manufacturer of computer. You believe that?
Well, did you have a? If it's an upgrade, did you have Windows installed already
Oh, no, no.
That might have been... Now, see, I wonder, you can
it
get...
It said you can do a fresh install, though. It gave me the option, and I read through the directions, and it didn't say anything about it requiring you to get your XP product key out or CD out or anything. And I was just once again reminded, I use Windows at work. I have to do development on it at times. But I just... There's a lot of disadvantages we point to the Windows platform and the software environment there. And my biggest beef with it is the convenience factor of having to deal with product keys and activation. And I just don't want to deal with all that.
You don't like a nice 35-character product key that you have to type in with case sensitivity?
It's not just that. It's like it doesn't work, you know. Or I'll decide, you know, to upgrade a machine, but I don't just go and buy a whole new machine. I go buy a few parts, and I change 3 computers in my house. And all of a sudden, you know, I'm trying to do an upgrade, and it can't work because it invalidates against some kind of hardware or something.
Well, see, there's your problem. You're not following the right procedure. You're supposed to take that old machine, throw it in the garbage, and buy a brand new one.
Buy a new machine now.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't back in the Commodore days, okay? This is 2007 now. Get with the program.
Ah, yeah. The good old days.
Yes. Get with the
program. Some people ask me how I got started in computers. I didn't really get started until after high school, pretty late in the game. Because during high school, we had a Commodore 64, and my friend and I would take those turns reading the machine code out of magazines and then typing it into the Commodore 64.
Uh-huh.
And you had this program that would check, like, the checksum to make sure that you entered in the numbers correctly.
Never got it right, huh?
We got a few of them to run, but it was... A lot of work for such little result.
Oh, yeah. You know,
and we had no idea what we were actually typing in or even really cared. It was, I don't know.
Hey, just to let you know, a comment from Herb Vista on our IRC said to say to you, don't put in a key, just do the install, then do an upgrade. After another 45 minutes, enter the key. It's an upgrade key. I don't know what that means because it sounds like a process.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it did give me an option to continue past that point without entering the product key. And
all you had to do was give a DNA sample, right?
It was asking me, I think, at that time to change the partitions. And I thought, well, since I can't resize the partition here, right? I can't resize the ext partition that I had there for Ubuntu. I was like, well, before I commit to this, I want to make sure that that product key is going to work because I know I'm going to be asked for it again. So I went back in the installation process to try to enter that key in again. So in the end, I decided it just wasn't worth it for me to give up the Ubuntu install and potentially reinstall, you know?
You just throw the disk in your neighbor's yard then?
No.
Break it in half and then throw it in his yard? You're going to kill a couple skunks with it. That'll keep the skunks out of your yard. Right there, just put that DVD right in the back of your yard. That'll keep them out.
Yeah, my stepson, he likes to modify Nerf guns. This is the 15-year-old. And he made this really, you know, powerful Nerf gun. And he was able to take a small nail and hot glue it onto the end of a Nerf bullet. And then he stood like 12 feet away from the wooden fence and shot the Nerf gun. And it made the bullet with this nail tip stick into the wooden fence. Pretty crazy.
And that's why the cops are watching them, isn't it?
Well, I realized, you know, maybe he could, you know, nail the skunks with it, so. Give him some night vision goggles.
Uh-huh. You know, his life, he's going to get sprayed, then arrested. And brought up on charges for animal cruelty.
Yeah.
That's the end of that. Oh.
You want to wrap it up, Dan?
Yeah, well, go ahead. You got Frapper Map stuff to talk. You actually do have some Frapper Map information, Pat.
Yeah, I actually figured out how to get the head count, and we're at 1,267 people on Frapper. Which sounds like a lot, but it's not really, because when you look at what Chess Griffin has for the Linux Reality Show, man, he's got like over 2,000.
We're not in competition with anybody.
No, we're not. I think Chess is the most popular Linux show out there. Congratulations to Chess.
But how did you figure that out? Who told you?
What you do is you go to the main... I figured it out on my own. You go to the Frapper main website, and then there's a search toolbar, and you pop the name in there, and then you'll get a listing of possible hits. And there's a bunch of numbers, like two or three numbers. The first one is the actual amount of people that are on the Frapper Map, so that's that. So we're over 1,000.
Why when you do the search they tell you that, but why not when you look at the page?
I don't know. It's a good question.
Because that would make sense, Dan.
Well, you know, it must be the Cinelera developers helping out over there. Oh. No, I like Cinelera is a really great product. Sorry. And is that it?
I think that's it. What music are you gonna play?
I have a question now. Here, I was just looking at articles on LXer today, and one of them is an article for ZoneMinder, digital surveillance systems, which was written for InfoWorld on March 17th. Apparently, that's awfully close to when we had
Phil.
Yeah, on
Phil.
That's only like 3 days after ours, and I don't recall ZoneMinder being in any press releases or anything prior to our show.
Actually, if you go to the ZoneMinder website, he has a section where he has like reviews and press releases.
But that's not what I said. Did they steal him from our show? Yeah. Damn them.
Well, actually, one of our listeners posted on the Elixir for that. They said this was on the Linux Link Tech Show. They have a link to
we had him 2 days before he... I'm just kidding. I don't care. That's great. I'm glad to see he's getting some publicity here. And Dan,
absolutely, man.
Dan Denny, I'm really glad that you came back on again, and I thank you for listening, being a listener also, and we'd love to have you on again in the future.
Okay, thanks a lot. Congratulations to you guys for having such a long run at this. And
for sticking to it.
Apparently, yeah.
Even when everybody else said go away.
Great.
Go away.
Yeah. Good luck with
I hope maybe I can make it to Ohio Linux Fest.
Hey, that would be awesome.
That would be cool.
Yeah. I don't know.
I would recommend not bringing your 15-year-old son, because chances are you will get arrested at the airport, detained, and you don't want a body cavity search with his luck. But actually, that would be great. If you could make it out there, we'd love to meet you in person.
Yep.
All right. I do have a song. It's by Solid. It's in the funk genre, called Porn. Looked interesting. We'll see what it sounds like. And thank you. Next week, we don't have anybody next week, do we, Pat?
It's just us.
Just us.
We're going to torture everybody.
Excellent. And hopefully Link will be back in full swing and rested up and not sick, because I miss him this week. Get better, Link. And Alan, you take it easy.
Yeah.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you, Dan, for being on the show. And we're out of here.
Good night.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Oh. Yeah, it couldn't be that perfect. I forgot to plug the laptop in. Here we go. There we go.
Sure. So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up. It's over. It's over.
Yeah, I didn't expect...
Nice freaking song, Dan.
Sorry, I didn't think it was going to be like
that.
What
the frick is that, man?
I don't know. I thought I'd try some different genre off the... and I just pulled that one. I said, you know, this looks... like it might be interesting. I didn't expect it to be like that, but then again.
That song, along with those creepy pictures that you posted, you're making me wonder about you, Dan.
Yes, why on earth would you post, would you
you're regressing.
Gimp yourself like that?
Why would I what?
Why on earth would you gimp yourself like that?
Dude, that's not me.
Okay.
That was not me in those pictures.
Okay.
Look like
no,
you.
No, that was not me in any of those pictures.
Who was it?
Those were two college roommates I had. Well, actually, one was my college roommate. The other was his friend.
Kind of look like you.
No.
All drunk and bloated.
No, that wasn't me. Back in those days, I wasn't as bloated as I am now. I was a svelte 175 pounds back then, so no, that wasn't me in those pictures.
Sorry about that.
That's okay.
That's what I thought,
you
too.
Frightening. No. You're frightening us.
I'm thinking, what the fuck is he doing to himself in these pictures?
No, that wasn't me. I wouldn't do that. Not to myself. No, that wasn't me.
Well, why would you go out and get the content to do something like that?
Because I thought it was hilarious, and my other friends at the time thought it was hilarious too. That guy, the guy that was on the couch, that's the guy we used to pull all those practical jokes on. You know, throwing the Christmas trees down his apartment steps so he couldn't get out of his basement apartment. Putting ads in the paper that he'll buy couches and all sorts of other stuff. Writing big signs that he's gay on the back of his van while he drives to work in the morning. All that kind of stuff.
Other people on the RC saying they thought that was you too.
No, that's not me. That was not me.
I thought it was you.
No, I wasn't even in the area when those pictures were taken. I don't even know how I got a hold of those pictures. One of my other friends gave them to me. I said, I got to take those and do something with them. Yeah.
So that's right. Photoshop.
No, it's not Photoshop. It was GIMP.
I'm getting out of here, so. Good night, everybody.